Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to a groundbreaking edition of the one-on-one Inside Lacrosse Podcast. John Gelati here. This week, we tried out some new technology on Google Hangout and got Ryan Boyle on the line via video chat from his New York City Trilogy offices and recorded it on a live Google Plus Hangout that aired on live on YouTube and InsideLacrosse.com as well. And it was a good time, a little bit of a interesting experience, adventure the first time through. Had some technical difficulties. I dropped a call, Ryan dropped a call, and it was a little bit of an adventure. But we pieced things together, we patched it back up, and this audio is the complete audio minus some of the technical difficulties. But it was an enlightening conversation, as always, with Ryan, who is one of the game's greatest minds, greatest players, and now a successful businessman. So he is another U.S. team hopeful for the fourth time this summer, Boston Cannon attackman, Trilogy Lacrosse CEO, and is also working with ESPNU as an analyst and is doing the upcoming Saturday Princeton-Syracuse game at 5 o'clock on ESPNU. So we talked about that game and the Princeton-Syracuse historical matchup in which he played two finals in a row, won the first one, lost the second one as a freshman and sophomore up at Princeton, and also talked about the upcoming Big City Classic matchup that features Princeton and Cornell at 4 o'clock, April 27th. MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey, BigCityClassic.com for tickets. And covered a few other things, instructional tips, a little preparation for the Cannon season. Mitch Belisle stopped in on the chat at one point, which was very nice, although he helped crash things the second time. But Mitch was great, fellow Boston Cannon and Trilogy Lacrosse employee. So it was good to have him unexpectedly join in, and we really thank Ryan for braving the technological waters that we did the first time through, and hopefully you guys enjoyed it. We'll be trying Google Hangout more, and we'll also be doing, obviously, more podcasts. Be sure to search us out on iTunes. Go to insidethecross.com/podcasts. You can also send this out via Twitter if you use my Twitter handle, at jgelati and at @inside_lacrosse. You can also use Facebook, Reddit, LinkedIn, whatever floats your boat. But we really appreciate Ryan for the time, and hopefully we will be doing more on the Google Hangout universe coming up soon.
We are live. The first ever Inside Lacrosse Google Plus Hangout, making history appropriately with the guy in Ryan Boyle, who has been part of our history since the beginning, back in first cover back in the 90s as a high schooler, and now through the college days of Princeton, the pro days at the Boston Cannons, and now as a Trilogy Lacrosse, the Trilogy Lacrosse CEO, ESPNU personality, and general renaissance man of lacrosse. How you doing, man? Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. I was wondering where you were going with why it made sense for me to be the first member of Google Plus, since I'm still of the print era when I read books and magazines and newspapers and things of that nature. So I don't know if it's totally applicable, but I feel a little bit like Michael Scott in the episode where he gets invited to the company party that's a chat room and he thinks he's driving to New York. But if you bear with me, I think I'll be okay. I'll settle in.
Yes. Well, the point that I was making was you've been there all along, from the print magazine, print newspaper days, now to the glossy era, and now to the Google Plus era. So that was kind of what the point that I was trying unsuccessfully to make. But
no, it was made
however,
well. It was made well.
Thank you. So in advance of the Princeton-Syracuse game on Saturday live on ESPNU at 5 o'clock, thought we would bring you in as someone who was very involved in the maybe the height of the Princeton-Syracuse rivalry in the early 2000s. You won a championship against Syracuse in 2001, lost one in 2002, but it was three years in a row that you guys played in the final. So maybe the first question, just kind of talk about that rivalry and what it meant, you know, what it means to between those two programs, and especially back when you were playing, and how strong it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was incredibly special. I mean, it was, you know, three straight finals. Man, that shows just the overall power, really, of the the two teams within an era. The fact that, with all the competitive players and coaching staffs, the fact that the same two teams would meet 3 years in a row, I think just speaks to the overall dominance that those two programs had during that era. And then, you know, how much mutual respect there was. Looking back at those times, it seems as though whenever you met somebody from Syracuse kind of in the off season, you would think that, you know, a guy from Princeton and a guy from Syracuse would be like oil and water. But every single Cuse guy that I ever kind of seemed to hang out with, you know, there was that respect of understanding what the other one represented from a tradition standpoint, from a legacy standpoint, you know, how hard it was to get on the field. You know, making the roster was one thing, then getting on the field was a whole different other thing. Sorry for the, noise in the background. It's New York here. So it was a special rivalry, to say the least.
Nice. Yeah, it was definitely, you know, three amazing games in a row. To have three teams, or to have two teams in the final 3 years in a row, I don't know if we'll ever see that again, that kind of consistency. But, you know, why don't we start with that 2001 final. It goes to overtime. You feed B.J. Prager for the winner in overtime, you know, as a freshman. Tell us about that game and kind of what was happening and what, you know, what the reaction was afterward.
Yeah, I mean, it was the game winner was a harmless little play, actually, a broken play. It wasn't anything we set up, like a lot of things, in lacrosse or sports, you know, every coach wants to act like they draw up the winning play, but if you just kind of let players play, that tends to let things happen. But Syracuse actually had a possession. They had a chance to win. I think we had one, too. So we simply cleared the ball. And then in the kind of the transition of clearing and getting into a set, BJ just kind of got lost in the crease. And I was actually very surprised that he was open. I almost did a double take before feeding him the ball. And then, you know, through his incredible skill, he was able to put one past, the keeper, Mulligan, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of pandemonium from there, and I just started running. I didn't know what else to do besides just run. And it was a dream come true, to be perfectly honest. It was exactly what I thought I was doing when I went to Princeton. You know, part of the reason I went to Princeton was to win a national championship. So it didn't, I never felt out of sorts. I never felt like I didn't belong. I never felt like, oh my God, this is so incredible. It was like, no, this is exactly what I came here to do.
In going into overtime, you know, you'd obviously played in plenty of big games during the season, plenty of big games at Gilman in a variety of sports. But still, like, what was kind of going through your head? You got the ball on your stick, overtime, the national championship game in front of, I would assume, the biggest crowd you had ever played in front of to date. What was kind of going through your head? Were there nerves or was it, you know, especially to have, you know, to basically have that game be on your stick, what was that like as a freshman?
I didn't feel anything. And that's, you know, what comes when you repeat an action over and over and over and over and over and over again, right? That's why you practice, because then when you get put into pressure situations, you don't need to rely on your brain in order to perform an action. It becomes instinctual. And so therefore that's why I almost didn't throw BJ the pass, because typically, you know, when you're going against a complex defense and there's a slide that occurs or you're dodging, you have to read a lot of variables and process information quickly. It was probably the easiest read I had all year. There's BJ. He's open. No one's around him. Throw him the ball. It was almost shockingly like a trap almost. And that's why I didn't throw it to him was because it was so strange. But as far as what was going through my brain or the nerves, I'd been playing the sport far too long, and it had been too deep in the season for that to be a potential issue. So I just played the game.
Gotcha. Well, you know, amazing, amazing game for those that remember it. And, you know, to get that title as a freshman was pretty amazing. And maybe one more question on that rivalry, just going back to the year after that and the comeback that you guys had to make that a one goal game against Syracuse again in the national championship game. What was, you know, in a game like that to go down by five or six early, late and then to come back the way you guys did? What was the key to getting back in that game and making that, again, another incredibly exciting game?
Yeah, to be perfectly honest with you, John, I only have one memory of that game, and that's strong memory, excuse me, and that's like the last 10 seconds. And it was a bit in disarray and a bit scrambly, and we didn't have a timeout left. So we couldn't call timeout. I really, to this day kind of kick myself, because instead of getting the ball at midfield and getting us organized and getting us into some sort of set and some sort of, organized play, for lack of better words, we kind of just wung it. And that's not really my style. That's not really the team style. I personally should have stepped up and made sure that we got into something, or at least had some semblance of creating a shot. And I missed that opportunity. And between you and me and whoever is listening, that's really all I remember from that game. I mean, I remember some other plays and some goals, but that's the only memory that sticks with me to this day, which kind of explains how I work.
Yeah.
It's kind of depressing.
Well, that's why, that's a competitor, right? I mean, that's why you are where you are. That's why you're still going for the U.S. team and MLL championships and, everything else. Let's kind of fast forward to Saturday. I would imagine, watched plenty of film and talked to plenty of people. What is your take on this Princeton Syracuse game?
Well, not to steal too much thunder from my telecast, but it's kind of funny in just the fact that the roles have kind of reversed. You know, you look at Syracuse and they're a strong defensive unit. I think they're good individual personnel. I think they play well together. Is there too much noise in the background? Are you picking up on that or no?
A little loud. Yeah, a little loud. But
we're loud here at Trilogy. And then offensively, they take their time and they don't turn the ball over. And they've got some good people that I think are underrated. Which is kind of funny to say that a Syracuse offensive player would be underrated, but there's not like a lot of stars. They're unselfish and they play well together. And then you look at Princeton, and there's like studs. It's like Schreiber is a stud. You know, Ficarro is like really, really slick. McDonald is really dangerous, right? I mean, Ambler is, one of the best freshmen in the country. Right up there. So you've got these really slick players for Princeton. It's just a total role reversal.
Well, I mean, Tom Schreiber's gotten a lot of attention this year as a Twerton Trophy candidate, right up in the top five, at this point. What is kind of – break down his game and what makes him so effective?
Oh, I mean, where do you start? Offensively, he's a nightmare matchup. He can really explosive athletically and run by most people that are covering him, whether that's his pole or not. It doesn't matter. Really deadly shot on the run. And then along with that, he has the vision to distribute the ball and feed directly to a goal, which is difficult for midfielders. Typically you see them kind of move it along and then that guy pass and that guy's, so they get a lot of second assists. And Tom has the foresight and the premonition to see not only the first slide, but he sees whether they're late on that second slide, and then he has the ability to see if the second slide does occur that he can throw that skip pass. So that's what makes him, pretty special. And then beyond that, just his fire and his, competitive spirit. You see him play on wings. I love it when they put him on the wing. I think it's really allows him to be much more dynamic. And same thing when he's on defense. If I was being critical of him, and I've said this to his face, he needs to exploit short stick matchups a little bit better. He needs to understand when he's catching a defense when they're rotating and can be aggressive and attack right away and get a shot. But if they know he's got a short stick matchup and they know he's going to dodge, then he needs to be much more deliberate and be patient and allow those slides to develop and then enable his vision to take over. So if I was being critical, that would be where I would start. But like I said, I've said it to his face.
All right, we are back with Ryan Boyle. Apologies for the technical difficulties. It figures that the first time we try this that the Google Hangout will drop for no reason, so I should have expected that. But thank you for hanging in there with us, Ryan.
No problem.
And thanks for not running out of the office as soon as that call dropped. But why don't we, you know, looking forward to this game Saturday, ESPNU live, 5 o'clock. Also looking forward to our Conoco Minolta Big City Classic coming up April 27th at MetLife Stadium. Cornell and Princeton will kick the day off at 4 o'clock. BigCityClassic.com for tickets. Ryan, as a now New York area resident and your business is located there, you're a Princeton guy. I know there's a ton of, a huge presence there. What is it mean for the game to have an event like this with four, you know, big time top five, top 10 teams in the New York metropolitan region in the Giants and Jets stadium?
No, I think it brings a national spotlight. And, you know, particularly with the New York metropolitan area being kind of, right there, the foreground, it brings a different level of press. And it's something you kind of hear and you don't know it. And without, unless you're in the thick of things, it's kind of hard to imagine. And I certainly grew up like, what do you mean there's more media in New York? But then I played for the Titans and I was like, whoa, oh, okay. Like there's just a lot more media. And from, organizations to, publicity, just every aspect of it kind of converges, for lack of better words here. And so there's that trickle-down effect. And in particular, when you look at Princeton and Cornell, and you're going to, you know, call a spade, you know, two Ivy League schools with a huge presence in New York, and those, a lot of, some of those people are fairly influential, you know, they're able to kind of put their hands on the event a little bit more than if it was in a different locale. And so that's where you, where I think it's really important is that it's able to celebrate the game in the biggest market in the city and in a venue that is obviously, you know, one of the premier facilities at the professional level in the country.
Absolutely. The venue is amazing. And maybe just kind of give us a little bit of insight into the Cornell-Princeton rivalry, obviously going back, you know, forever in the Ivy League, but seems to, at least the last 4 or 5 years has really amped up as, you know, kind of determining the Ivy League tournament seeding, the Ivy League in general before that tournament existed, and then national seeding as well. Just what does that rivalry entail these days?
Yeah, I mean, I think it so much of it depends on who you ask. You know, I think that maybe if you asked a Cornell guy, and you know, we could maybe pull Mitch into this. I don't know where, if he's at his desk or not, but, you know, they have such a rich tradition, you know, dating back, to the days of you know, Richie Moran and in the '70s and, just national champions and all Americans I think the Princeton revival, if you will, in the '90s, that kind of caught Cornell, at a lower moment. You know, I think that kind of chaps them a little bit. And so now that they're kind of back in prominence, you know, I think they would probably make the argument of they're back where they kind of always were used to being. Whereas, we kind of, are enjoying almost, even though it's been a couple decades, I think to them it's relatively newer success, a nouveau riche of the Ivy League. But I think that there's a competitive spirit between the two schools for sure. That kind of goes without saying. And certainly while I respect the tradition that they might have, I don't really care for it much. and always enjoyed beating them because there was some sort of air about them that they, just because they did things a certain way, they kind of deserved to win. It was like, no, that's not the how this works. But it's upon graduation and learning some of the people, particularly some of the recent graduates. It's a great program. It's filled with unbelievable people. And some of my, obviously Mitch, I mean, I work with him and he's one of my best friends. So through his network, I've gotten a chance to meet some other people and they're all tremendous. So it's the jokes are more made out of fun than anything else, but deep, deep down, there's some bitterness towards the other school.
Good. I'm glad that can bear itself out in the office every day, yeah. The trilogy offices, with you and Mitch Belisle. That's great. I can just,
yeah, Joe Moore's here too. So he just graduated from Syracuse. So there's,
yes.
So there's, these next few weeks are going to be pretty interesting. There's a couple bets that have been laid down, but didn't mean to cut you off, but I had to give a throw out to Joe.
Nice. Well, yeah, I didn't realize that. It's a nice hire by you guys. He's a good guy, good player too. You guys got a lot of athletic talent in that office. I'm impressed. Well, yeah, why don't we kind of segue into some of the instructional tips, and, you know, Trilogy does so much instruction, teaching kids all over the country. And what is kind of generally your main message? I know you guys communicate a lot to these kids across different levels, but what is your main message when you're working with kids one-on-one at the grassroots level?
Yeah, I mean, everything for us, it comes back to our mission of education. And that's really what our core is. And we always come back to that. If something is from an educational standpoint, and if we can improve someone's understanding of the game, then, you know, it's in line with the Trilogy brand. And that really can cross a number of different platforms and a bunch of different demographics. So, you know, certainly we work with a lot of players, but we also work with a lot of coaches and helping them build out their curriculum and their strategies. And we also work with parents to understand this recruiting world, and how to navigate this process as a parent. You know, what are some of the things that you should be doing at home, in order to make sure that your son is putting themselves in the best position to develop their skills. You know, I was very fortunate to come from a lacrosse family, where I had, you know, a mother and father and older siblings that all played. But, you know, a lot of parents out there don't really know what to do, and that's produces anxiety, whether they not knowing how many scholarships, you know, a school has to offer and how that all works, to not knowing how to pick up a stick themselves and play catch. So it all manifests itself with, you know, our on-field instruction, with our camps, with our club teams, with our tournaments, with our clinics, but, it's much more rooted in kind of providing the appropriate instruction for the appropriate audience.
Gotcha. Now what's maybe like one key thing? There's obviously a million things that kids coming up can do, you know, junior high kids maybe targeted, they can be doing, but what would be like one key thing that from your level and after all that you've accomplished can kind of impart down there and be like, look, this is the one thing that maybe I still do or at least that was hugely important to my evolution and development?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, it's play another sport. And I'm not just giving that the lip service. You know, the multi-sport athlete, there's just so many crossover skills. And I really mean a comparative dynamic sport, you know, football, basketball. Yeah, do you want to come say hello?
You on the road with Foss Jack?
Yeah, we were just talking about Cornell.
Who is that?
It's John.
What's up, Mitch? How you doing, buddy?
Doing well, just getting ready for a little vacation here.
Vacation? What?
Well, next week.
You allowed to go
first
in?
Getting ready for a doubleheader.
So, yeah, I was going to say, oh, you guys got a bye week?
No, so we play up in Minnesota against Buffalo tomorrow, and then Philly on Sunday, or on Saturday, Sunday, and then off to Puerto Rico on Monday.
Nice. I'm impressed. Well, while you're there, why don't you respond to this? I don't know if you heard Ryan's comment about the Cornell guys kind of feeling like the way that they work entitles them to success on the field. I think I'm paraphrasing here, which is unfair, but what is your response to that from the Cornell perspective?
Like, just because you guys think you do like 5 a.m. runs in Canada, you're going to win, as opposed to since we're just better than you.
Well, as Coach Tambroni always said, mental is the physical sport, 4-1. So if we think we're going to win, then there's 4 times more likely chance that we're going to win, right? It's kind of like the placebo effect. Whether or not we actually have the talent to win, if we just believe you're going to win, you go out there and you make plays and, you know, you don't always win, but I think puts you in a better position to win than a bunch of entitled, spoiled players that maybe have not worked quite as hard. Not naming any names here. Just saying.
It's, yep.
I love it.
Yeah.
placebo effect too. You know, love talking to the Ivy League guys. So Mitch, what's your take on the Cornell Princeton matchup coming up at Big City Classic April 27th?
I'm really excited about it.
What's on the line?
I have not seen Princeton play this year, unfortunately.
They're pretty good.
And I've heard that they're good, and Ryan, I think, is a professional full-time commentator for the Princeton team. But he's had some good things to say about him, and I've been working a little bit with Chad Wiedemeyer, and Tyler Fiorito has worked out with us a couple times, and he's had some good things to say about a couple of their guys. So I'm curious to see. It's going to be a really cool venue, the Big City Classic, and the fact that that happens to be that game, plus Notre Dame to Syracuse. That's really cool. I'm bummed that, I'm hoping I can't make it because I'll have hopefully NLL playoffs, but we'll see. If not, then there's a chance to pop over. I'm really excited to at least watch the game on replay.
Nice. Well, while you guys are both there, why don't we talk a little bit, if you have a couple minutes left, some MLL preparation, you guys getting ready for the season. I know training camp's right around the corner. A little overlap for you right now, Mitch, but, you know, Ryan, what's your take? What do you guys take into this season?
Yeah, I think anytime you lose the year before, you have that fire in your belly, and understanding, you know, where you need to get better, from a personnel standpoint, and then what you need to do from an execution standpoint. So, yeah, I think we had a good draft. That certainly helps. That addresses some of our areas of concern, if you will. I think schematically, bringing in Coach John Tucker to help address some of the things from an X's and O's standpoint is something I'm personally very excited about, just having worked with him in the past, getting way, way back. I mean, a lot of things we teach a trilogy date back to what Coach Tucker taught me during my time at Gilman. So I think we're going to be able to be a little bit more creative offensively. And then understanding, you know, how did we lose, what happened, and then addressing that, whether that's, did we fizzle out because of conditioning, or were we just not set up for success from a personnel standpoint and a strategic standpoint. So, and those are the things that we're going to have to look at as a collective unit during training camp.
And Ryan obviously goes the intellectual route. I go the brute force route. We've actually been mandating some preseason training practices that have been pretty fun, actually. We've gotten together Ari, J.J. Gobain, Ryan, as I mentioned, Tyler Fiorito, and a couple other guys have come out. We've done it now, I guess, just 2 weeks, but hopefully keeping it rolling in the midweek up here in Brooklyn and shooting around, doing some one-on-ones, two-on-twos, three-on-threes. So from the physical aspect of it, I think getting prepared physically for the guys that haven't played in the NLL, they gotta start feeling like what it feels like to get hit, and that change of direction kind of conditioning is way different than going for a 3 mile run. So that's been a lot of fun and just physically getting prepared. Obviously with the NLL, just a little bit different of a kind of conditioning, but I feel at least good for now, and hopefully these guys are starting to feel more and more ready.
I passed the Mitch Belisle run test. That was a big
wow.
That was my fault, everybody. My fault.
Well, we're even. Yeah. What the question that I was excited for you to answer, and this will be the second to last question. What does the Mitch Belisle run test entail preseason for the Boston Cannons?
So, there's basically a cone 25 yards away. So you're at one cone, and there's a cone. It's 25 yards, so you run there and then back. So it's a 50-yard sprint. Then you rotate, so he would go, then I would go, then we'd rest for, I don't know, he had it all timed out. So you go one, so up and back is one rep. So you go one, one, two, three, four, five, six, five, four, three, two, one, one.
Wow.
There were times when I was not in control physically of my legs.
Wow. And,
It was no joke.
That's pretty amazing. And is that an old Cornell thing, or did he just come up with that on his own?
I believe it's an old Cornell thing, but he added in the fives. So I think they go four, six, four. He added in that little five wrinkle, much to my pleasure.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I know you have to get going. So one last question, just, and I think you were kind of answering it when Mitch, sidled over to the chat. One main tip for kids in terms of, you're kind of answering it with the multi-sport, multi-sport answer. But maybe more in terms of like a drill or like, something they can do on their own to help their development.
I mean, I'd love to go more lacrosse related as opposed to, there's the kind of the cross platform and play their sport, but then within the sport, and, you know, I'm not just saying this because I wear this hat now, but that is watch lacrosse. You have to watch lacrosse. So I was incredibly fortunate to have, you know, great high school games, and great college games at my fingertips. But there was no college games on TV, and there was no professional league. So the one game that would get shown a year, I would tape that on my old VHS, you know, so that I could watch it over and over and over again. And when you watch the game, you actually, and you don't want it, you want to watch it without sound on, or you can listen to it with sound, but you want to hone in on a player or two that you kind of want to acclimate yourself to and study what makes them successful. What did they do? How did they get open? Why do they keep scoring goals? You know, look at that, study that, and then try to incorporate that into your own game. So the really successful players are successful for a reason, and you want to watch them and pick a player that maybe you're, you know, physically comparable to, or maybe your skill set is comparable to, or that's the player you want to become. That's what you most project yourself looking like. And then watch that player and hone in and just study them. And don't try to understand all the players on the field. Just understand what that person does. That's it. Do that. And, you know, now kids live in an era where there's games all over the place, and you can DVR things. I mean, to prepare for games, I watch old games on the Watch ESPN app. That wasn't feasible 15 years ago, you know, 20 years ago. It's feasible now though, and that's incredible. So if you don't live in an area where you can go watch a game down the street, do that. And then you gotta have a favorite player. You know, if I do instructional and I ask who's your favorite attackman or who's your favorite defenseman or who's the best defenseman in the world, and they don't have an opinion, but they know who their favorite quarterback is, or they know who the top three quarterbacks in the NFL are, that's a problem.
Yeah, I couldn't, and I've heard that from multiple pros now that say, professionals who say, look, you know, watching VHS tapes and honing in the same thing, honing in on those guys, whether it's, you know, Michael Watson or, you know, Ryan Powell or Casey Powell, those guys, like whoever it may be, everybody had that guy, or a couple guys that they watched on tape that they watched religiously and learned from. Just real quick, who are those guys for you?
Well, you know, at the local level, I watched a lot of high school. So I watched my brother, my oldest brother. And then I started, you know, John Hess was somebody that I really gravitated towards, and really appreciated, what he did. And then, you know, I watched a lot of the Hopkins teams of the, you know, the mid to late 90s, you know, Denahans and I mean, Dylan Schlott was either the best player or the worst player, depending on who you asked. You know, the guy had 40-some goals and he was a crease guy. Well, you don't just have 40-some goals. you just don't. So I really enjoyed watching the Loyola teams that when they were coached by Cottle and just how creative they were, particularly on their – on he was running some of the first invert sets ever put together, and their extra man offense packages were quite impressive as well. So that was where I maybe veered from Loyola. I didn't maybe have a player that I like to watch, but I like to watch, you know, what Cottle was doing from a strategic standpoint.
Nice. Well, I couldn't agree more. That's great advice, and obviously more easily done nowadays with ESPNU and the like. So, well, I know you got to get running, so I appreciate you being a part of the first ever Google Plus Hangout with Inside the Cross. We endured plenty of technological miracles and challenges, but it was hopefully fun, and I will try to splice this together and make make something out of it for people to kind of access later on. But look forward to the Syracuse Princeton game, 5 o'clock Saturday on ESPNU, and look forward to the Big City Classic April 27th up at the Meadowlands, BigCityClassic.com, and then TrilogyLacrosse.com. Best way to get with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. And nice. Well, you guys are doing a great job. Well,
if Mitch were here, he'd say, you know, hit us up on Facebook and Twitter and all, you know, but that'd be Mitch talking the same way he talks about Cornell.
Good luck as well with the Boston Cannons preseason, and it sounds like you're in well prepared already, thanks in part to Mitch. So hopefully you guys will be in good shape once the season starts up at the end of the month.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, John. Appreciate being on.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. Good luck with everything.
Inside the Cross Podcast.